Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome, everyone, to the PFF Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, John Macri, fantasy analyst here at PFF. And joining me, the MVP of the preseason, working harder than anyone in the fantasy football world to get every piece of fantasy-relevant data out to the masses immediately after the starters leave the field during each preseason game. He is the one and only Nathan Yonke. Nate, I hope that between the grind of preseason games this weekend that you at least got some R&R in there. So how you doing after this weekend?
I'm doing pretty well still. Probably a little tireder than I'd like to be right now, but at least got some sleep each of the nights. But definitely grinding through preseason. I think yesterday I was counting and I think I either had published or wrote 10 different articles that either went up or are going up either today or tomorrow. So still have more articles to go, but definitely enjoyed having the preseason back and having new information that we could actually like have tangible rather than just people speculating based off what we've seen in training camp so far. So it was nice to see what some of these teams are starting to think about some of these players.
Yeah, it's so fun, man. Like the preseason, it's the first signs, like the real signs in game that we get for these players, the first kind of hints and clues of what teams are going to do with their players this season. It's really exciting. Definitely more information than what training camp is, which is just basically reports from open portions of practices and things like that, right? So yeah, it's nice to get some football in there, and yeah, appreciate you being able to get all that information out there so quickly to all of our fantasy followers. Speaking of fantasy, we do have a couple big pieces of fantasy news that dropped before we hit record today, which was great timing. The first one being that Indianapolis Colts running back Jonathan Taylor is back with the team today. He's continuing his hold in apparently and is still on the PUP list, but he is back in some kind of sort of not all the way. Nate, it's not confirmation that he'll play week one, but it's at least a start.
Yeah, it's good news, and it's at least a pretty clear sign that he'll be with the team most likely. Like, I'm going to guess the hold-in will last for the rest of the preseason probably, so he doesn't have to worry about practicing or potentially getting himself hurt over these next couple weeks. But I think it's a pretty clear sign that he'll play week one. I think the only thing will be if they ease him in a little bit or if they're trying to send a message by not playing him as much week one. But I think by week two, you're probably just fine. So I had been slowly but surely moving him down my rankings a little bit. We'll probably bounce him back up a little bit after this news. But you're not drafting him based on what he's going to do week one. You're drafting him based on what he's going to do all the other weeks. So definitely not as concerned now as I was before.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely promising news there for Jonathan Taylor. I'm sure we'll get more updates as the season draws near as well. Another running back that we did at least get word that J.K. Dobbins has been activated off the PUP list, though he hasn't practiced with the team yet during camp. I know you've been saying all along that you think Dobbins is going to play week one as well, and this certainly also feels like a step in the right direction.
Yeah, him getting off the list probably means that they expect him to be back soon. So it's just another case of a running back's not happy with his contract. The one thing that he can do is not participate in training camp. So that's what he's doing. But really not too much else that running backs can do at this point. So fully expect him back, even though it might not be for the preseason, but I still expect him back week one.
Yeah. And we talked about it last episode too, right? In the risers and fallers, he was kind of falling. Gus Edwards was rising. That's probably going to level back out again now with this news too. So last piece of news before we get going, Zach Ertz, who is not even 9 months removed from his torn ACL, has been cleared to play, is apparently on track to start week one. This one, at least for me, came as a bit of a surprise. Where would you maybe now consider drafting Ertz amongst like fantasy tight ends this season?
Yeah, I think one, this is definitely good news for him, the fact that he's back. So it'll be good to see him and play. It'll be interesting to see how much he ends up practicing. I doubt he plays in the preseason, but it's a case where it seemed like there's a chance that Arizona could cut him once he's healthy rather than keep him on the team with Trey McBride there. But I'll be very interesting to see if they do keep him on the team. I probably still won't be drafting him just because they still have Trey McBride there. So if anything, I feel like this will be a rotation. There's at least a chance Ertz could win his job back, in which case this could be fairly good. But I could also see this being a problem for someone like Rondale Moore, since I would expect this to lead to more two tight end sets if they do keep Ertz. As we, not to get ahead of myself too much, but we did see in the preseason that Moore was just playing in three wide receiver sets, unlike what he was doing at times last year. So if he's just playing in three wide receiver sets and they're using two tight end sets, that means less playing time for Moore. So that might be my biggest takeaway, is I probably am not trusting either Cardinals tight end, as long as they're still both on the roster, and it's potentially a little bad news for Moore.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me too. I'm definitely not as interested in Trey McBride anymore. And yeah, Zach Ertz, there's still question marks there about that offense and what it'll look like. So makes him a little bit risky, even though he's looking like he'll be healthy for week one. But yeah, we'll get into so much more. I mean, there is a lot to talk about from every game this preseason. You know, who started, who sat out, who played in what offensive personnel packages, who got left out. Did any running backs separate themselves from their backfield competition, or are they doomed to, you know, those headache inducing committees, plus so much more. So I can't wait to get into it. So I'll shut up in a minute so that we can figure it all out. We'll start with running backs and things like that. But first, we do have to give a quick shout out to our wonderful presenting sponsor, Fabric by Gerber Life. As a parent, your child's well-being is your top priority. You want to see them chase their dreams, embrace life's adventures, and thrive in this world. But you also know life can be unpredictable, and that's why it's important to plan for the unexpected so they can continue to thrive no matter what. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help get you a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/fantasy. That's meetfabric.com/fantasy. meetfabric.com/fantasy. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, here we go. We won't go over every single game. Instead, we'll kind of hit on the top 10 most interesting and fantasy relevant storylines to come out of week one of the preseason. If you do want to get in on something that we don't end up covering today that you were interested in from this past weekend, then you'll more than likely find it in Nate's fantasy game recap, which he did for every single game. So be sure to check those out on pff.com if you haven't already. With that being said, let's start with the running backs, and in Philadelphia, where we did not see Kenneth Gainwell or Boston Scott, but we did see DeAndre Swift and Rashad Penny. So, Nate, what did the Eagles tell us about their approach to the running back position based on this game?
Yeah, this was a fairly confusing thing that happened with the Eagles running backs here. We did get reports about 2 days before the preseason matchup that Gainwell was seeing a lot more work with the first team, looking like an every down running back. So that was one thing that seemed a little odd. And then the fact that Boston Scott also sat out the game, the Eagles rested several players of their top three, or I think top four wide receivers, obviously Dallas Goedert, plenty of other players on the offense and defense. So they started Swift. He played the first six snaps of the game, broke a 22-yard run in there. His day was done after that point. Rashad Penny took over, continued playing after Marcus Mariota was done as well. So Penny played for a while. Nick Sirianni said after the game that he just wanted to see some of these running backs get tackled. So the first time they're getting tackled isn't in the regular season, that we might see different running backs next week. So it'll be interesting to see what they do next week. Generally, when you have veterans resting, it means they're at the top of the depth chart. So as of right now, I wouldn't be surprised if Gainwell is considered the starter in Philadelphia, but it was weird having Boston Scott, who is presumably the fourth guy on this depth chart, also get the day off. I know I've seen the theory that maybe it's because they're familiar with Gainwell and Scott, not as familiar with the other running backs. But we also had someone like Olamide Zaccheaus, the wide receiver that they added from the Atlanta Falcons this offseason. He got a veteran day rest as well, and he's gotten some work with the ones at times during training camp. So they are resting other people that they're less familiar with. I can sort of understand Sirianni's reasoning of let these guys get hit because they have had injury histories. They didn't play all of last season. They probably need a little bit more to get ready for the season than Gainwell and Scott do. So I could sort of see that argument. In general, I updated my rankings several times before I published them, trying to figure out what to do with these guys. Definitely moved Gainwell and Scott up, Swift and Penny down. I still have Swift just barely as the top one from the group, but I have Gainwell not that far after, a little gap for Penny, and then Scott's the one I moved up the most just because he got the veteran day off, and it seems like he's still in this rotation. He's still a decent away from these three players, but I basically had him very low, assuming he was not going to get playing time this year, but now he might get playing time, and there's at least a path of he could be the starter at some point of time. So,
Yeah, it's really interesting the way that the Eagles did it for this first preseason game anyways, and it definitely leads a lot of questions, and you mentioned it, right? Like, maybe it has to do with that familiarity thing. I know they did something similar with their linebackers as well, right? Nakobe Dean, who was with the team last year, sat out, and they rotated in a lot of these other newer guys and things like that. So, you know, maybe the coaching staff wants to give these guys who they do have questions about or haven't seen that much of in game situations a chance to get reps in different situations. And one drive doesn't always provide that opportunity, so they'll keep them in the game a little bit longer and things like that. We'll see how this looks as we go a couple more preseason games here, and because it is just one game so far. But at the very least, like you said, Gainwell specifically should probably at least be getting drafted in a lot more drafts right now, because most like non-best ball leagues, he's nearing like 200 ADP. So would think that comes up a fair bit here in the next couple of weeks or so if this situation holds. All right, let's move on to another interesting running back situation in Jacksonville. This one is one that we touched on last episode, but we actually get to see the situation play out on a small sample size this weekend. Nate, Tank Biggie Bigsby versus Travis Tupac Etienne has been a hot topic this offseason and has got the fantasy community divided. What did the Jags provide us in the way of usage for this backfield deployment?
So he played one snap with the starters. It was a 3rd-and-1. He came in for that short yarded situation. Didn't end up getting the 1 yard there, but did play better later in the preseason with the backups. I saw plenty of people on the platform formerly known as Twitter call this a victory for ETN. But really, in my perspective, if anything, this is a negative for ETN, a positive for Bigsby, just since typically we don't see rookie running backs play with the starters in the first week of the preseason. We weren't really seeing it last year. I think the only notable one was Breece Hall saw 2 snaps with the starters compared to 7 by Michael Carter a year ago. This year we had like Devin Achane 5th on Miami's depth chart based on who didn't play and who played ahead of him. In Chicago, Roschon Johnson, I think, was 4th. We saw Zach Charbonnet playing behind DJ Dallas completely in Seattle. So we've seen all of these running backs pretty far down depth charts compared to what we think they'll end up being, where the fact that Bigsby saw any snaps with the starters is a pretty clear indication that he's going to see snaps when the regular season hits. The fact that it was a short yarded situation is pretty important to note, just because that's part of the reason they drafted Bigsby, is ETN wasn't the best running back in terms of scoring touchdowns at the goal line, converting when they needed 1 or 2 yards. So this seems like a role that Bigsby can have in the regular season. And that's a role where you get the touchdowns at the 1 or 2 yard line. We saw that with Jamal Williams in Detroit last year, of Williams getting all those short touchdowns. So I don't think this is a case where Bigsby is definitely going to become the starter. I don't think he's going to see over 50% of chance snaps. I think it's at least possible, but I don't think that's a likely scenario. So I think like Etienne's job as a starter is safe, but it could be fewer snaps than he was seeing at his peak last year, which hurts his fantasy production. So I think Bigsby is definitely someone worth drafting late in drafts at this point, just in case he starts seeing a bigger role, and especially as a handcuff for Etienne. But I'm definitely have been moving Etienne slowly down my draft board. I moved him behind guys like Alexander Mattison, Miles Sanders this past weekend. So I'm probably definitely not drafting him at his current ADP.
Yeah, for sure. This has been something that I think pretty much all of us here, at least at PFF, have talked about it in some form or another. And that is it's the concern for ETN's usage and with Bigsby on the team and his day two draft capital. And this did give us at least a taste of that, you know, and again, on a smaller scale, but can kind of confirms the priors a little bit here that ETN just not really going to be worth that third round ADP if Bigsby is getting those short yardage situations and goal line touches. You know, Bigsby at least could be fantasy relevant if he is getting those kind of high value touches there at the goal line specifically, right? So he's somebody that I think, you know, could be a value at his ADP, but Etienne, like you said, you've been moving him down. I think that makes the most sense here, based on what we saw from this first game anyways, and what we've been hearing all offseason really. Yep. All right, from one rookie running back who we're optimistic about to one that, at least after this weekend, taking us to the Miami backfield, Nate, maybe one we're not as excited about, and that is Devin Achane. For this Dolphins team, what were some of the things that you saw from their backfield? You know, guys like who played, who didn't, when did they play, things like that.
So they rested all of their starters across the offense and I believe defense as well. That included Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson at running back. They started Myles Gaskin, who's been on the team for a couple years now. Salvin Ahmed also saw some snaps with the starters for the game, not starters with the team, but saw snaps all before Achane did. Gaskin looked pretty good. I know when I write my reports, I'm focusing almost entirely on how the players are used when they're used, not so much how well they perform. But I did note that Gaskin played well, 57 yards on 7 carries. Achane, as a rusher, didn't do as well. Through the first three quarters, gained 25 yards on his first 10 carries. Did make a few nice catches in the fourth quarter, but that's the fourth quarter of a preseason game. So, like, this wasn't great news for Achane. It definitely isn't overly negative news since we see running backs this far down the depth chart all the time. We saw this with Tyler Algier last year, Rashad White, both fourth or fifth on the depth chart in their first preseason games, and then slowly but surely worked their way up. So, I definitely think Achane could see more playing time, could work his way up to third on the depth chart or even second at some point of time. But it definitely wasn't good news to have him this far down to begin with and to be outperformed by some of the other players who have been on the team for a bit longer.
Yeah, this was another one, like we touched on last episode, I was saying maybe the best we could hope for was to rule out some possible week one contributors by what they show us in these preseason games. And like you said, judging by this first one, it seems like Achane is probably the guy to avoid in drafts, especially as the one who is far and away the top drafted running back of the bunch, while Mostert and Jeff Wilson are going much later. Not to say that Achane can't and won't work his way up the depth chart, like you said, maybe later in the season, but he's now starting to feel like, you know, for leagues that have already drafted, he could end up being one of those guys that's dropped in most leagues after week one and then maybe gets worthy of a waiver claim later in the season.
Yeah, I will say I don't have my rankings memorized. I wouldn't be surprised if I still have Achane as the top, not because I expect him to do the most, but because he has the most upside. We saw what Mostert could do last year. We saw what Wilson could do last year. Mm-hmm. Neither of them were guys that you necessarily want starting, and they're still going to be competing with each other for snaps. Where Achane is at least the one that has the potential to maybe get there. Now it looks like the path will be a little bit harder for him to get there, but there's still at least a chance where I don't see that chance being as big for any of the other Miami running backs.
That's fair, for sure. All right, another ambiguous backfield provides us a better picture of what to expect, and that happens in Chicago as we got some clarity on who the leader in the clubhouse is. Nate, after what the Bears showed us at the running back position, are we ready to move Khalil Herbert up the ranks?
did move Herbert up a little bit. I've got my Walter Payton jersey on to represent Chicago running backs today, but Herbert played all of the snaps with the starters, which all of those snaps were just two drives of 3 yards each because Justin Fields kept throwing short passes that ended up going several yards for touchdowns, so they didn't end up playing their starters all that much. So I think the big thing with Herbert is we have been hearing general good news for him recently. He did was the target of the pass that ended up getting one of those touchdowns. So the fact that he was in for that kind of passing situation is also good news, even though we've heard Foreman potentially seeing more snaps in the pass game. But Chicago, these past couple of years, it seemed like Herbert was the better runner, Montgomery was the better receiver, but Chicago never really went all the way in using their running backs in that kind of way. They were consistently playing David Montgomery the first two drives, Khalil Herbert the third drive, and I think they were the only team that really rotated by drive in that kind of way and were so consistent with it. Had been doing it for 2 years now, so I kind of was amused that it was the same thing where Herbert played the first two drives here and then Foreman came in for the following drive. So made me think maybe that's the kind of approach that we might see this season, but I think it's too early to go all in on Herbert just because this is just six snaps. If they were longer drives, maybe they would have rotated their backs a little bit more. There's still time since Herbert's the incumbent, so it kind of makes sense that he's the starter as well. But everything has kind of been pointing in a positive direction for Herbert, even though this isn't a clear cut. It's definitely his job.
Yeah. Yeah, and you touched on it too, that maybe my favorite thing to come out of this game is Justin Fields earning a perfect NFL passer rating despite just three passes with a hilarious 105% of his passing yards coming after the catch. So for those keeping track, that's negative 5% air yards. Incredible stuff. Hopefully something that we see hold up this season as far as the team at least providing some after the catch help for Fields, because they were one of the lowest teams in the league last year in providing those kind of bonus yards for their quarterback. And DJ Moore, who did break one in that preseason game, is another guy who can definitely help with that given his history. But anyways, back to the backfield. Yeah, like you said, if Herbert gets that David Montgomery usage, he'll definitely be worthy of getting drafted. I think much higher than his current ADP would suggest, which is like RB35 and later on most sites. And look, we've seen him being efficient with his touches. I mean, hell, he literally just took one reception for a 50 plus yard house call this preseason already. So if these Bears backs can get maybe, you know, a little bit more help too, as far as efficiency goes, with defenses maybe honing in more on Justin Fields as a runner, similarly to the Ravens with Lamar. And I know the Bears offensive line doesn't quite match up to what the Ravens have been, but that's just another reason with that potential, you know, yards per carry boost that Herbert can end up being one of the better values for this season, especially if he can continue to hold off Deontay Foreman and Roschon Johnson.
There. And I did note, we're all basing this off my top 10 article, which takes all of my recaps, summarizes it. So if you don't want to go through all of the details, you can just look at the top 10. I also noted there James Cook of the Buffalo Bills, kind of similar situation where you kind of expected him to see the majority of the snaps with the starters. He did play 100%. So it was good to see there, but it was also kind of expected. So another running back who seems to be the starter heading in a positive direction, but we don't know exactly how things will end up playing out.
Love it. All right. Before we go any further, I do want to shout out one more of our sponsors, the good folks over at DraftKings. Want to get in on the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries, ending your season? With best ball on DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, best ball on DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest best ball contest ever and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. To start playing best ball, download the DraftKings app using code PFF. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scores. No ads, drops, trades, or I should have played him instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with code PFF and start playing best ball today. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament and you'll get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars only on DraftKings with code PFF. Call gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer, opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued as 10 DraftKings dollars. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. All right, Nate, we got a few other running back situations that might need sorting off. You listed a few of them here. A bunch of RB2 roles that could be up for grabs still in your article for PFF.com today. The Patriots, Jets, Bengals, Colts, Titans, Chargers, and Cowboys. Which of these do you think is the most interesting for fantasy purposes this year?
I think the two of them that were interesting for similar reasons, and that's Tennessee and Indianapolis, both because we had a rookie part of that rotation. We saw Evan Hull start for the Colts over Deion Jackson. So the fact that Hull might already be ahead of Jackson, probably not the greatest sign for Jackson, despite his big games that he had last year. So I could see Hull factoring in even with Jonathan Taylor back. And even if Zach Moss returns, I could see Hull being a factor, particularly in the pass game on Tennessee. Hassan Haskins started the game, but Tajay Spears played most of the snaps on the first drive and ended up looking better than Haskins throughout the game. So Spears is someone that I wouldn't be surprised if he's the number two sooner rather than later. And then I think the other interesting one is the Patriots, and that they were rotating three different players, Pierre Strong and Kevin Harris, more or less rotating by drive. But J.J. Taylor was also mixing in passing situations for all of them. So the fact that they were rotating so much and they weren't, like I said before, not looking at performance in the preseason too much, but the Patriots running backs really didn't look that great. So even I would be less surprised now if they add a running back than I did before in free agency, just since it seems like a little bit of a mess there in their backup situation currently.
Yeah, for sure. That looking at that situation, the way it stood on this first preseason game, I was starting to feel more and more convinced that Ramondre Stevenson is going to dominate the touches this year. I know it's not, you know, typical of New England, but think again with Bill O'Brien coming in, his tendency to lean on one back, especially given Stevenson's skill set, the lack of competition behind him now. I just feel like this ends up being far from a committee this year, as long as they don't bring somebody in. So like you said, that's still a possibility, but based on these guys, you know, the players behind Stevenson, I think he's got a pretty good chance of getting a lot more touches this year as well. So, all right. Enough about the,
I was going to touch on one last running back thing while I was thinking of it, since we mentioned Gus Edwards at the start. It wasn't a rotation of running backs, but in Baltimore, we did see Justice Hill play before Gus Edwards, and Hill got all of his snaps before Edwards got in. So Hill, there's a chance he's second on the depth chart at this point behind J.K. Dobbins. It was definitely interesting since they also played Josh Johnson at quarterback before Tyler Huntley. So Baltimore might have just been trying some weird stuff, but I think it's definitely something to look at, especially with Hill's record as a receiving running back and Baltimore wanting to pass the ball more. So at least a situation to keep an eye on, that Hill might be more of a factor in Baltimore than we expected.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. Yeah, I was going to say enough about the running backs. Now it's enough about the running backs. let's talk some wide receivers and start by focusing on some of the important usage notes that you observed in these games, especially when it comes to which wide receivers were in and out in 11 personnel. This is important because it could tell us which players will see more snaps and run more routes, which naturally comes with more targets. So Nate, you pulled a bunch of very useful information on this from these first preseason games. Which key players did you notice that were in and out of 11 personnel for these games?
Sure. Christian Kirk was probably the biggest surprise with Jacksonville, with Calvin Ridley now there. It wasn't surprising to see Calvin Ridley playing in two wide receiver sets, but Kirk was playing in those formations 89% of the time last year. Zay Jones only 60-something percent of the time, but Zay Jones was taking those snaps over Kirk. It's not entirely surprising, since typically it's a slot receiver who's not playing in those two receiver sets, and Kirk's the slot receiver for Jacksonville. So not the biggest surprise in the world, but it still probably means a decrease in snaps for Kirk this season whenever they're in two tight end sets. I know if you kind of look at the charts that I post and how many routes he was running compared to the other receivers, how many snaps he was playing, it does look a little deceiving, since Jacksonville was using some 13 personnel, a little bit more 12 personnel as well than I'd expect. So expect Kirk to see more playing time than he saw with the starters in this game, running more routes than he saw with the starters in this game, just not as many snaps as he was seeing last season. I noted in the article that roughly 21% of all fantasy production occurs when there's two wide receivers on the field or less. So that isn't a death sentence to wide receivers by any mean. It just caps the ceiling a little bit more. Jackson Smith Njigba is another one. No surprise that he's going to be a slot player in Seattle, but the Seattle rested a number of starters in this game, and even then, Smith Njigba was only playing in three wide receiver sets. Typically, I would expect a player, if he's going to play in any situation in the regular season, they'd at least try him out there in the preseason. That's been a pretty clear trend with tight ends over the years, that if they're only playing in 11 personnel or only playing in two tight end sets, that's probably how they'll be used in the regular season. So at least early in the season, Smith Njigba, I'd expect only to be in three wide receiver sets. So not expecting Tyler Lockett's playing time to be in danger anytime soon. Similarly, Jaden Reed with the Packers only played in 11 personnel, even when backups were coming in. So again, don't expect him to be a threat to Romeo Doubs playing time anytime soon. Especially with these rookies, though, it could just be the teams trying to only put so much on their plate to begin with and will slowly add to it. So with Kirk, I'm probably more concerned for the season as a whole, but with some of these rookies, it's probably more this is the trend of how we'll see things early in the season, and then later in the season, things could change. I will note with Reed, he was playing almost entirely in the slot, which Green Bay traditionally has rotated players in and out of the slot more. Green Bay uses their slot receivers a lot more than other teams, so this could be some good news for Reed that he was only playing in the slot, because a lot of Green Bay's production comes there. So that might be good news for Reed and bad news for Doubs and Christian Watson. And then noted, at least a dozen other wide receivers in the article that were only playing in the slot. Rondale Moore, Mecole Hardman, two more that not 100%, but were playing behind other players and two wide receivers for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting stuff there. I mean, you know, Kirk, like you said, he played 76% of his snaps in the slot last season, still played almost every passing down snap for them in 12 personnel as well, led the team in that regard. So yeah, just not sure if this is something that they're actually planning on doing much differently this year, but now maybe with Calvin Ridley on the team, they feel as having those longer, like 6'1" plus wide receivers like Ridley and Zay Jones just suits that personnel better. It's definitely a great spot by you. It's something to keep an eye on as we work through this preseason and into the early regular season as well.
Yeah, and it could be something where, like, anytime Ridley or Zay Jones needs a break in 12 personnel, Kirk will be ready to go in. So it doesn't necessarily need to be 100% and 0% like it was in this game. It could be like 80% and 60% and 60% or something like that. So
yeah, for sure. Once we get a larger sample size, it's definitely easier to kind of tell what that breakdown is going to be. So let's go on to a quick recap of the first round wide receivers that we saw this weekend. And we did see all four of them in action. You mentioned Jackson Smith and Jigba, but we also got Quentin Johnston, Zay Flowers, and Jordan Addison. We all love rookies, and when we get to see them in action, it's easy to overreact to every target thrown their way. That being said, is it crazy to believe that Quentin Johnston and Jackson Smith and Jigba will sustain 50% target rates for the rest of the season now?
Yeah, I don't quite think that will happen. It was kind of interesting that all four of these wide receivers kind of found themselves in similar situations this first week of the preseason. All their teams rested their starters. A lot of them rested another top veteran backup as well. So this really didn't give us any indication of where these guys sit on the depth chart, because the vast majority of the time teams are playing their rookies, even if they might be ahead of a veteran at this point of the preseason. So not entirely surprising to see all these guys play. All of them started the game, saw the majority of the snaps, at least early on in their games. Quentin Johnston is someone that I'd note who had a somewhat poor performance, had a drop in there. He did score a touchdown near the end. I know there's been talk of him dropping passes in training camp as well. I just wanted to say not too worried about that. We haven't seen drops being too much of a sustainable thing for wide receivers. So not worried about Johnston from that perspective. If anything, my worry is that Josh Palmer also had the day off. So maybe Johnston isn't the wide receiver three to begin the season. And then Zay Flowers was interesting in that they moved him around a little bit, was playing on the outside in the slot. Devin Duvernay, who's typically been their slot receiver, was also playing in this game, but playing out wide almost all of his snaps. So Flowers was seeing more time in the slot than Duvernay is. So that's, in my opinion, one less receiver that Flowers has to worry about for offensive snaps this season. And the fact that he was playing multiple positions probably means they're going to move him around a bit in the regular season as well. So I saw the usage of him to be a positive, even though we didn't see where he stood amongst the other players. And then Jordan Addison just played well in his time. So had a nice catch, had another catch that wasn't ruled a catch. But if you watch the play, it definitely was, and it was very impressive. So he was the highest graded wide receiver this past week among those with at least 10 routes in the first half of games. So can't tell too much out of just one preseason game and two catches, but it was at least a positive to see him there. I will also note he played almost entirely out wide, so that could mean more snaps in the slot by Jefferson and Osborne, and more snaps in the slot by Jefferson could be a good thing for him.
Yeah, that Jordan Addison catch was pretty crazy, and there was a few good examples actually already just from this weekend why the PFF grades matter more than just looking at the box score, right? The Jordan Addison catch being one of them. We collect that data there and would recognize that it was a catch, and you know there was Trey Lance as well throwing a touchdown, but it going off the hands, which should have been an easy interception. But this was fun for at least to get to see these rookie wide receivers. Obviously, the 50% target rate would not be sustainable. But I did find it interesting. You know, I was looking at the Ravens because obviously this is one of the bigger offensive scheme changes potentially that we might see this year. And I thought it was interesting that on the game overall, the Ravens were well below average, league average in 11 personnel, though their first two drives, so the snaps that Flowers was in the game, they spent 70% of those snaps in 11 personnel, which is an above average rate. And on multiple occasions, they were spread out four wide with Isaiah Likely also lined up in the slot. So something to keep an eye on there as far as their offensive formations kind of evolve now with Todd Monken as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that going forward, since I think the Ravens only had three or four tight ends active in the game. So that could have also influenced things of not wanting too much two tight end sets to not have the tight ends play too much, because Likely was the starter, even though he's probably good enough to not have to play in the game. It just, I think they might have been down some players or just not have that many on the roster to begin with. But that's just off the top of my head.
Yeah. No, that's definitely it. All right, let's do one more ad read here. And that is our friends at Manscaped. If you haven't heard already, it's Smooth Sack Summer. When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you're scaped from pubes to bum. That's right. This is the summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. The leaders in below the waist grooming are making sure we all have a ball this summer by giving our pants partners everything they need to stay fresh. Dive headfirst into Smooth Sack Summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our code PFF. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. They have built the ultimate grooming bundle for your summer grooming. Their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch, can engage a travel lock, and gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, or shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and Shed Travel Bag. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. It's Smooth Sack Summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind. All right. In somewhat of a follow-up from last episode, we mentioned this player's ADP fall being the largest among wide receivers. And after this game, we may have evidence that to further cement that fall on our draft boards. Nate, Tyquan Thornton of the New England Patriots, he made a nice catch that had people excited. But what is some of the context for Thornton from this game that should probably temper that excitement for 2023?
Sure. So first off, the Patriots rested plenty of players. This included Juju Smith-Schuster, Devontae Parker, Kendrick Bourne, so their top three wide receivers. Then they started Kayshon Boutte and Demario Douglas. Their two sixth-round rookies started the game over Tyquan Thornton. Thornton was one of those players who was only playing in 11 personnel. So Douglas only played the first two snaps of the game, and then his day was done. So Belichick gave a fairly Belichick answer when asked about it, of just the playing time was based on what he's seen in practice or something to that extent. So Douglas has been getting a lot of rave reviews recently, so it seems like Douglas could very well already be fourth on the depth chart above Tyquan Thornton. So even though Thornton did make a nice catch and had two targets in this game on his 10 routes with the starters, it came at a point when backups were playing, and after he was a second round pick who saw a decent amount of playing time, you would kind of expect him to be among those players who maybe got a veteran day off or maybe played a couple of snaps and then left the game early like Douglas did. So this is a pretty decent indication that he currently sits fifth on the depth chart. It'll be hard to see him surpass Douglas at this point, since typically once a rookie gets ahead of a veteran, they stay ahead of the veteran unless something pretty dramatic happens. And Kendrick Bourne have been all good reports, and Smith-Schuster and Parker both got new contracts this year. So I don't see Thornton really working his way back up the depth chart at this point. So he could make the roster at fifth. It also wouldn't be entirely surprising if he doesn't end up making the roster, or if the Patriots try to move him or something. So probably not drafting Thornton at this point. And Douglas is someone who's been moving up my dynasty rankings in particular, but could very well. I did post my 400 rankings this week. I don't know if Douglas made the top 400 off the top of my head, but definitely getting near that range at the very least.
Yeah, this for me, at least in regards to Thornton, I pretty much seals him as like a kind of do not draft for me this year. I mean, maybe something happens in season to make him worthy of like a waiver wire claim, but I'm just not that invested in this offense enough to be spending a draft pick on any New England receiving option that isn't going to be among their top three-ish in their passing game here. All right, let's close things out with a few notes from the tight ends of the league and start with Sean Payton's Denver Broncos. It was a rough start for the offense as a whole, and Payton kept the starters out there for longer than expected, which I'm not sure if that was the original plan or not, or if they just looked so off that he wanted to get them some more reps and hopefully build a little confidence. The good thing for us, at least as fantasy observers, is that we got a larger sample of snaps with the starting offense to give us some more hints and clues as to what to expect. So, Nate, what did we see from Payton's offense specifically in regards to the tight end position?
Yeah, it's been nice for weeks now talking about Sean Payton and having a bunch of his guys from the Saints on the team right now, and seeing that play out this week. It was a very clear pattern with the tight ends. Adam Trautman was always in on first and second downs. Greg Dulcich was always in on third downs. And then the two were together in two tight end sets. So that's definitely a decrease in playing time for Greg this season compared to what we saw last season. Trautman, someone that the last time that he was healthy with Sean Payton as his coach, he was playing over 80% of offensive snaps with the Saints in 2021 at that time. So I definitely expect Trautman to be a very significant part of this offense in terms of at least being on the field. Note, Chris Manhertz didn't play in this game, another free agent addition who's a run blocker and could play in two tight end sets as well. So that could mean even less time. I think the one saving grace here is looking at quotes from Sean Payton over these past couple months. He did refer to Greg Dulcich as a joker, which is similar to what Taysom Hill has been called, or even going back further, someone like Darren Sproles. So someone who has been major factors in Payton's offenses in the past, playing a very unique role in the offense. And this is the preseason. I wouldn't expect them to be doing any of the crazy stuff that we might expect in season. So I do think even though his playing time could decrease, there could be some opportunities for him to be a big part of the offense and even maybe see some carries, even though he's never done that in the pros or in college before. But the other jokers in the past have been factors in the run game, so possible he is too. So did move him down my ranking some, but I still think he's worthy of being a sleeper just because he has gotten some praise from Sean Payton before and potentially could have a role in the offense that could be very beneficial. But I think the odds of him becoming a consistent fantasy starter are lower now than they were before.
Yeah, for sure. As somebody who listed Dulcich as one of my like breakout tight ends for this season, I thought he could have like a pretty decent sized role in this offense. But yeah, if it's going to be like this, what we saw in this game, he's splitting significant snaps, coming off the field a bunch, they're might be better tight end two options to kind of take flyers on in drafts at this point. But yeah, still hoping for that that Joker role, like you said, that could pay off nicely. But speaking of better tight end two options to target, how about some more rookie tight end talk? This has been a pretty hot topic these last few weeks of camp, but the hype around this year's rookie tight end class has only continued to grow this offseason as a number of these guys are working as the top tight ends in their offense. Reports are glowing about their potential as receivers. Nate, which of the rookie tight ends stood out to you the most from this past weekend's games?
Yeah, we had three of them that had pretty significant roles with the starters. Detroit rested a bunch of their players, but at tight end, they played all of their healthy tight ends. So Sam Laporta played in this game. He took all of the snaps in 11 personnel, all of the snaps in 12 personnel, just came off the field for 21 personnel. We've seen plenty of tight ends have this kind of role. It's similar to what, ironically, TJ Hockenson has in Minnesota right now, where he plays a lot in 11 and 12, doesn't play in 21 personnel. But 21 personnel, more often than not, is a running formation. They run the ball when there's a fullback on the field. So definitely not the worst thing for tight ends. So the fact that Laporta is already ahead of Brock Wright and the other Detroit tight ends is a good sign that he should keep this job and have it a week one and going forward. So he should be on the field running plenty of pass routes. At this point, the only thing is how well he can do, how often he'll get targeted, but being on the field is a big battle for rookie tight ends. And he's already gotten to that point. Luke Musgrave with the Packers, the second one, played 100% of snaps with the starters. It was good news in that they also drafted Tyler Kraft in the third round. He only came in for two tight end sets with the starters. Tyler Davis, who is another tight end on the roster, played with them the last couple of years, didn't play with the second team, and unfortunately he suffered a season-ending injury. So while it was good at the time to see that Musgrave was ahead of him on the depth chart, now it's unfortunate that he's out with an injury. I will note Josiah DeGuara of the Packers was out for this game. He was part of the rotation last year, so it's not 100% that Musgrave will be the every down player at this point, but definitely a positive sign. And then the last tight end, Dalton Kincaid, first three snaps of the game with the starters, played as an inside tight end, playing right next to Dawson Knox, so playing a traditional tight end role. First drive didn't give us any indication of if one or the other is the starter. Next drive, it was all Kincaid, but Knox never came back into the game. So this could be a case where the starter only played a little bit and then came out before everyone else. We saw this with DJ Moore with Chicago. Aaron Jones with the Packers played one snap and then his day was done. So we've seen a number of cases of guys just playing a snap or two and then calling it a day. So that could have been what happened with Knox here. It could also be that Kincaid's already surpassed Knox as the tight end for 11 personnel. So definitely something to watch, but no great way of knowing just based off of this first preseason game. But it was good to see Kincaid both line up as a traditional tight end as well as lining up in the slot.
Yeah, yeah. And the same thing with Musgrave too, right? Like I found that really encouraging, and I might be a bit bias when it comes to Musgrave because I'm a big fan of his. I love his potential as a receiver and for fantasy. I know I wrote him up as one of my guys heading into the NFL draft, and I was ready to spend a late first round NFL draft pick on this guy because I liked him so much. He's 6'6", very high-end athlete for the position. He scored a 9.77 relative athletic score as well. I know he missed a huge chunk of last season with an injury, but in the games that he played, it was pretty clear that Oregon State was ready to build their offense around this guy. He had 11 catches for 169 yards and a touchdown through just two games in 2022, 3.38 yards per route run. Again, it's a small sample size, but even in the Senior Bowl, we saw some of that special receiving ability as well. I know Renner had listed him as the best vertical threat in this class. But yeah, I just watched all of his routes from this past weekend, and honestly, I'm even more excited about him for this season. He lined up in line and in the slot, always found separation, great feel for zone coverage. He beat man coverage with speed, even had a wide open potential huge gainer where Jordan Love overthrew him early in the first quarter. You could just kind of tell he knows how to make himself a quarterback friendly target as well. You could see him find space in scramble drills, always looking to work back to the ball in deeper zone coverages. So the question is going to be if Love can get him the ball, but all the potential is there for him as a receiving option. And I just love to see that, you know, he's getting that tight end one usage already as a rookie. It's very promising. So excited about that. All right, that is going to do it for our fantasy portion. Again, if you have any fantasy questions from this first week's worth of preseason games, definitely check out Nate's articles on PFF.com. He did the top 10 highlights from this preseason, things to keep an eye on, and recap for every single game. So everything that you would need is going to be found on PFF.com, written by Nathan Yonke there. So check that out for sure. And then we'll just keep it rolling through the next few weeks. So we will be back for episodes. But before we do that, before we sign off, we do have another 5-round draft that we have to get done here, coming off of the best throwback NFL jerseys, which I snuck out a win in. So I'm back on top here, broke the tie. We are moving over to the best pre-2010 video games. So this is across all consoles, as long as the game came out prior to 2010. Nate, you have the first pick here. I know you mentioned you haven't played video games in like 10 years, so this works out well for you. How are you feeling about this one?
I'm honestly not sure how to feel about it, since I don't know what all video games you enjoy to play, so I don't know exactly how to draft my strategy. I know we play Goose Goose Duck, which has come out in the last couple of years, so neither of us can draft that one. But outside of that, I really don't know what your strategy is going to be, so I have no idea if this is going to be one where you're sniping me every other pick, or if it's going to be like when we did the Alien movies ones, where I basically got my 5 and you got your 5 and we didn't really conflict with each other all that much. So we'll see how this goes. It was also difficult for me to figure out what should go number 1 overall, since there's a number of them where it's like, well, there's this video game, but if I don't get that, I can get another one later in the draft and those kind of things. I looked a little bit on what different lists had for best video games of all time. So I feel like I should at least get this one classic, because there's nothing that really compares to it, and that's Tetris. Tetris still lives up to its legacy to this day. It's still fun to play, and it's simple, but it works. And I played a game recently that's very similar to Tetris, so I feel like it stood the test of time, and there's been no like duplicate of it that stands up next to it. So because of its uniqueness, and I don't think I can get something like Tetris later in this draft, I'll get Tetris with the first pick.
Yeah, Tetris is a great call. That again, look, we're looking at like classic video games, and I think that's going to do well for voters who recognize Tetris as definitely one of the best games of all time. It was on my list as well. So for me, oh man, all right, I'm going to go. You're right. That first overall pick is tough, because it could go different ways here. But I'm gonna go with the Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time from 1998. That one is for the N64. A lot of people's best Zelda game of all time. It's very close for me, but it is not number one. There is a more recent one that is top for me, but within 2010, Ocarina of Time to me is top of the charts.
This is where I'm glad I didn't put too much time trying to figure out my rankings, because now that I have like this one piece of information that you're going to go with a Nintendo 64 game first, makes me think that I should make sure I get some Nintendo 64 while I still can. So I'm going to go with Super Mario 64. Remember playing that a ton when it came out. I think that was Nintendo 64 the first time that I was able to have my own video game system. So we'll have a lot of classics from that one in my memory, but just going from 2D Mario to 3D Mario for the first time, it was a lot of fun to play. So, and it also ranks high on plenty of the lists that I looked at. So I was also glad that there was at least a couple video games that other people thought ranked high that I also thought ranked high.
Yeah, that's a great call. I mean, it was definitely on my list here. So now that I don't want to give you any more of my strategy. So I'm going to switch it up again here. So this time, okay, Super Mario World from 1990. It's a Super Nintendo game. Again, it's a 2D side scroller. It's not the 3D Mario, which, yeah, I think Super Mario 64 is the superior one. But I got to put this one up there. Hopefully some of the boomers like myself prefer the Super Nintendo version, and then I could steal a few votes that way and also go with a Super Mario game.
There, I'm gonna have to stick with the Nintendo theme though, but go to a different Nintendo system for this. I'm gonna go with Pokemon Red, for the Game Boy. That was my first Pokemon game. Played it far more than I played any other Pokemon game, and I think that's the classic one that everyone remembers when they think of Pokemon to begin with. So, there have definitely been some other good Pokemon games that are worth considering, but in this case, I think it's best to go with the original.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, most people respect the original, whatever. What was it, 150 or 151 or something like that?
Your 51, yeah.
There's just so many right now. There's it's impossible to keep track of. So best to go with the original there for sure. All right, my next one. I'm gonna go. Oh God, I'm gonna go Metal Gear Solid. It's 1998, and it's for the original PlayStation 1. But Metal Gear Solid was like, for me, it was like the first game that told me that video games can be like really, really cool and badass. And as much as I liked like some of the first person shooters on the N64, Metal Gear Solid was the ultimate for me. So that one really got me into games. So I got to put that on the list.
There. We are a sports podcast, and so I do feel like I need to get at least one sports game, but I feel like if I go with a sports game and it's not Madden, then you're gonna go swipe Madden away from me. So I'm gonna get Madden NFL 2004, the one where Michael Vick more or less broke the game, but being able to have Michael Vick throw and run as well as he was able to do in that game. And I think that's the year that they introduced like the ownership version of the franchise mode so that you can own a team. So that added a new level. One thing that at one point I was hiring all of our part-time people at Pro Football Focus, and there was just a consistent thing that you see of people would play Madden and they wouldn't necessarily always be playing the game, but they would do the franchise mode and would love doing the franchise mode without the game. So I think that kind of element is something that people that listen to our podcast probably like as well. So happy to get Madden as at least having one sports game on my list.
Yeah, good call. And yeah, the Madden franchise mode piece of the resume, I've noticed even when I was doing the part-time hiring a couple of years ago, it's still very common. It still shows up quite a bit. But yeah, good call. And yeah, that was the game. I actually bought a Michael Vick jersey because of that game. So that's a good one. My next one is gonna be, I guess I'll come back to Nintendo 64, and I'm gonna go GoldenEye 007. To me, the best multiplayer game. I know there's everything else that's come after it, the Halos and Call of Duties of the world, but GoldenEye set the standard right away, and to this day, to me at least, as somebody who grew up with that game, it still can't be beat. So playing that with like a bunch of friends and stuff was definitely the best time. So I gotta put GoldenEye in there.
I think that's a very deserving entry. I have one pick left, and I have like four different ones that I'm choosing from that I'm like, which one are the voters going to like the most? Or do I want to pick one that's similar to ones that I've already picked? But I think I have to pick one that I feel like has stood the test of time, is a classic, and that I also enjoyed playing a lot, even though I didn't expect that I'd enjoy playing it a lot. And that's Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. I was never someone who skated. I'd never got a skateboard, but that game, just there's something about it that was really enjoyable to play and made me more interested in the sport than anything else has. So, and looking at some lists, it still ranks high on some of the all-time lists. So also happy to see that and have it come to my mind, since it's probably not something that I think about the most compared to some of these other games where there's newer versions of the game that I'd consider playing. But I think Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, definitely one of the more unique, fun games of all time.
Yeah, I actually like that pick. I completely forgot about Tony Hawk, but it brought back memories for sure of going to like friends' houses, and I was never good at it, but I used to watch people play it and get really good at it. I would just mash buttons and try to do the combos and stuff, and it never worked out. So but yeah, it was a fun game for sure. All right, my last pick. Oh man, it is tough. Like I was going to put Batman Arkham Asylum in here. I thought about Grand Theft Auto 4, San Andreas, Final Fantasy 7. I think I'm going to go, oh God. I think I'm going to go, this is so stupid. I'm going to go Resident Evil 4. For it was for the GameCube originally. It's 2005, but such a great game. It is beloved in the franchise of Resident Evil, and it still holds up to this day, and it's been remastered and remade for basically every console since that it's come out, and it's still getting remade today. There's even an updated newest version that came out, I think, this year. But just such a fun game that I'm going to put that. Maybe I should have put one of the other ones, GTA or Batman or Final Fantasy instead, but going to go with Resident Evil 4 and see how that works out for me.
Yeah, I was also thinking The Sims, Sonic the Hedgehog, Super Smash Brothers, any of the versions that came out that early. I'm not sure how I could leave all of those off. Wii Sports, I think, counts based on the criteria, and that one was definitely different for its time. So definitely lots of good options. So maybe we'll need some other top video games that is more specific category at some point, maybe for a specific console or something like that. But definitely left a lot of good video games on the table.
There's a ton. Yeah, we're going to probably catch some shit for some of these. But yeah, there's a lot of good options. Yeah, we'll definitely have to do another video game poll in the near future here. But that's going to do it for another episode of the PFF Fantasy Podcast. I hope you all found those many preseason nuggets insightful and helpful to get you ready for the 2023 season. Nate, again, a huge thank you to you for grinding through all the data from preseason week one so that we can get sorted for fantasy season. I know you have a bunch of new stuff going up on the site in the coming days, so please let the people know what they have to look forward to this week.
Yeah, I think I'll just focus on this weekend today and tomorrow, since we're going to be back on the podcast tomorrow. So I'll hope anyone listens then and can hear what I have even later in the week. But definitely this weekend had all of my recap articles, had my top 10 go up today, which honestly, if you listen to this entire thing, you probably don't need to read my top 10 recap. You're probably going to be more interested in all of my individual game recaps at this point, based on what we talked about today, basically matching that article. But also had my top 400 updated rankings go up today. I had a number of requests with my Perfect Draft article series to cover a 14-team league, so did a 14-team draft strategy that went up today, continuing to do player profiles. Tomorrow will be top five league winners, breakout wide receivers. I'm going to update my Perfect Draft strategy for 12-team leagues at individual picks, so that'll be throughout the week, and then more player profiles.
Beautiful. Love it. And yeah, for me, I did the IDP preseason takeaways from each of this past weekend's games. That's up on the site. I'm going to be doing, I think coming out Wednesday will be my dark horse wide receiver ones. Then I'll do tight end one candidates as well. And then for the zero running back crowd, I have a draft strategy piece also coming out later this week that will focus on starting drafts, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, and what that looks like for this season. I also want to give a massive shout out to the PFF data team. This is the extraordinary group of guys and gals that without them, we wouldn't have all this wonderful data to pour through on a weekly basis. Just an elite team of data collectors from the part-time crew all the way up to the senior management. There is no better data team on the planet than what we have here at PFF. And for that, I can't thank them enough for all their hard work that they do and continue to do all season long to get us the best football data on the planet. Dare I say the universe, truly the unsung heroes here. So if you know any of them, be sure to tell them thank you as well. All right, that'll do it. We'll be back tomorrow covering running back draft strategies, so be sure to tune in then. Subscribe to the PFF Fantasy YouTube channel as well as the PFF Fantasy Discord. And until next time, peace out.